Halloween is supposed to be a time of fun and excitement for kids. Costumes, candy, trick-or-treating, until one crazy man laced pixie sticks with cyanide. Today, the disturbing story of a Halloween that some will never forget. The story of Ronald Clark O'Brien on the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
Ronald Clark O'Brien, nicknamed the Candyman and the man who killed Halloween, was an American man convicted of killing his 8-year-old son, Halloween 1974, with a potassium cyanide-laced pixie stick that was collected during trick-or-treating. O'Brien poisoned his son in order to claim life insurance money to ease his own financial troubles, as he was $100,000 in debt. O'Brien also distributed poisoned candy to his daughter and 3 other children in an attempt to cover up his crime. However, neither his daughter nor the other children ate the poisoned candy. He was convicted of capital murder in June of 1975 and sentenced to death. He was executed by lethal injection in March of 1984. It's the dark side of Wikipedia, and as we're getting into the month of October, thought I'd grab some fun Halloween stories. People lacing pixie sticks with cyanide and killing their children, you know, shit like that. Back in the good old days, you know, where, you know, although the good old days, still, he was convicted in 75 and finally died in 84. But I don't know. It's shit like that where I'm like, I'm cool with him dying. I'm not like someone's going to go like run around with a pro death penalty thing or anti death penalty thing at all. But some people I think are very worthy of it. And this would happen to be one of them.
Okay, here's what I don't get.
Yeah.
Is that, okay, if you're that far in debt, and you hear this all the time, people killing other people for life insurance because they're so far in debt.
Yeah.
Why don't you just kill yourself then? You know, it's like, I'm so far in debt, there's no way out of it. I have to kill somebody. Well, maybe you're the one.
Because all roads lead to narcissism.
You always have to make a good point. But it's just, it's like your kid. Your 8-year-old kid, and that had to have been planned for a while to get the life insurance policy and all that.
Yeah.
That's just sick.
You got to have a special case of fucked in the head to
cover up the crime.
Yeah. To pull that thing off. I mean, that's. I can't. No.
Hell for that guy.
Yeah, there is a special place in hell for that guy. I mean, there's certain people in the world, no one in my family or circle of friends or people that I'm even, you know, even have ever physically met that I would say I'd like to lace a pixie stick with cyanide. But there's certain world people out there that I would say I wish they had a pixie stick with cyanide in it. But they're usually really horrible people.
Child.
Yeah, I mean,
your own,
and for the $100,000, really, this is worth it to you? To like, what the fuck is going through your mind?
I just don't get that. The only way you can see out of debt isn't like, oh, you know, bankruptcy. Yeah. It's killing your child.
And 75, you could still declare debt bankruptcy more than once at that point in history. So. He could have certainly done that. But
the thing is, if he's so bad at managing money that he's $100,000 in debt, mm-hmm. I mean, when you add in your house and your car, like lots of us are that far in debt.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And probably it's credit card debt and all that stuff.
But I don't think it was like, I'm going to kill my kid to pay off my mortgage.
So even if you were to get out of the credit card debt.
Yeah.
Killed somebody and you got the insurance money, people like you will just end up right back there again because you can't manage money. That's how you got $100,000 in debt.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunately how a lot of people function, but it takes a special type of narcissism, I think, to take the life of your child for the insurance money, because you have to wonder when you kind of identify this, and because narcissists will do crazy fucking shit with the assumption that they're not going to get caught. And when they get caught, it's like it's so shocking. And sometimes I often wonder if they believe their truth. You know, to me, the word "my truth" sometimes can be insanely narcissistic, especially if there's like many sides to stories. It's like, okay, there is a such thing as the truth, and that's what we should always be striving for. When someone like this got caught, if he had not gotten caught, people like that, I think, could easily go on. And I think eventually he'd believe that his son had died of something else. He would tell himself that it was, you know, he was poisoned. It was somebody else that did it. Or there's a way that they are able to justify the absolute batshit crazy stuff that they do and continue on as if nothing ever happened, leaving the rest of us in their wake to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And that's the thing. They'll look up and go, nothing. I'm fine. It's you. And yeah. And that's how, you know, I think someone like this could function.
Whatever they want.
What's like, that?
It's almost like entitlement. Like, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Well, the disorder goes far. I mean, there's you know, that's fine line between, you know, narcissistic personality disorder and psychopath and sociopath as well. You know, there's sometimes it's, you know, narcissism is certainly part of both of those, but it's like you add just a few more toppings onto that hot fudge sundae and you're into the world of sociopath and psychopath. And it doesn't take a whole lot of more sprinkles to get there. I think that's what is really kind of scary to me about today in the world that we live in. And I'm not talking about COVID and I'm not talking about anything political. I'm positive. I'm just speaking in general about people. And I'd say, you know, the millennial generation area, there's a lot of narcissism there. And you can't say that about, I guess technically I'm in there because I'm like at the very, very beginning of it. I don't view myself as millennial, but it starts in like 1982 and that's when I was born. A lot of us in that area really feel like we don't fit in with the millennials at all. I think millennial personally starts more closer to like 90-ish if you were born around there. But I see a lot of it. I noticed a lot of it even as a child with kids and playing with kids as a child. I would say like just a few grades below me, I could say there's something different going on here. There's some different way of educating or something. A parent, I don't know what the hell it is because there's a lot of shared parents there. But it felt like there was some different way of thinking. And there's narcissists certainly in all generations. There's narcissists in boomers. There's narcissists in Generation X. There's narcissists everywhere. But, you know, you see it more and more when things and individuals have been catered to, overly entitled, and then have no accountability. And then you mix it with someone who may already have an existing, you know, mental illness. And then the two make for the best blizzard of craziness in the world. I don't know why I'm doing ice cream references tonight, but it's a peanut butter parfait from hell. But it is. It's kind of like that. And when you but my point being, I think there's an overabundance of it. I think there is an epidemic of narcissism in our society, and that the scary part is, a lot of them are still sitting there with the narcissist area. But like I said, few more sprinkles and you're into sociopath territory. You're into psychopath territory. And it just really makes me, you know, cautious about the future and what the hell the dark side of Wikipedia is going to be like 20 years from now when we're talking about today, and not just all the obvious shit that goes on, but when, you know, killers are revealed years from now as this or that, and the crazy fucking stories that that we're going to have. Granted, we've had some crazy fucking stories from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and today, a better variety of crazy for the Valley. But the no repeat killer workday guarantee. But it's, you know, it's stuff like that where it's just like, it's, I guess we're going to have a lot more of it. I don't know. That's, I guess my.
I just think that is a lot of everybody gets a ribbon mentality.
Yeah.
Like there are no losers. Everybody's a winner. No, there are losers.
Yes.
Like your team literally lost.
That's the shit I hate.
And your team literally won. And you got up to bat and you struck out. You really did. You don't get to go to base when you strike out. You have to earn your way. You got to get a hit. And I just think there's so many parents that, and I kind of get it. Like, you know, I would think it's tough watching your kid fail. And, you know, you want to encourage them, but I do think it's kind of gotten out of hand.
It's needed. It's needed. There needs to be more discipline. It's been a shitty year, but when you're growing up, you need to be exposed to disappointment in life, because there's a lot of disappointment in life. And if you don't, and it's always sheltered, the human mind will end up finding ways of sheltering it itself if it never learns a way to cope, because you never taught them a way to cope, or they were enabled too much. And then you can be out of the picture, and it's no longer T-ball that, you know, you're everybody's a winner at. It's, you know, jobs, it's life, it's relationships that they're always right at. And they're really not. And nobody's given a trophy for fucking up lives and relationships. And they just, but they're able to kind of not feel that impact, that's the shame that so many of us, you know, live on, you know, or at least use as, like, you know, the warning of, like, okay, don't put your hand on the burner, it's getting too hot. They just leave the hand on the burner because they have, like, fucking Teflon gloves on now. Because, I mean, it can happen two ways. You can be overexposed to it, and you can be completely sheltered. And I think each of them can create, you know, almost the same sort of condition. It's that middle ground that we need to find more of, like, okay, let's learn where the burner is getting too hot and what the pain is, so we know to move our hand. And then we can continue on with our lives. But I mean, you know, extreme trauma and then also extreme shelter from any form of even minor disappointment, I think, can create the same type of person. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think we have
that guy who we're talking about.
Yeah.
That was like 1974.
Yes.
So there have always been people like that.
Yes, there certainly have.
I think it's worse.
Yeah. There's always been people like that. But my concern is that it will ramp up more and more. But who knows?
Now everybody's right.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong anymore.
Let's see what happens, everyone. Let's continue on with the story and find out more about this fine young gentleman who liked to experiment with pixie sticks. O'Brien lived with his wife, Deanne, in Deer Park, Texas, with their two children, son Timothy and daughter Elizabeth. O'Brien worked as an optician at Texas State Optical in Shreveport, Houston. He was the deacon at the Second Baptist Church, where he also sang in the choir and was in charge of the local bus program. On October 31st, 1974, O'Brien took his two children trick-or-treating in Pasadena, Texas, in a neighborhood. O'Brien's neighbor and his two children accompanied them. After visiting a home where the occupant failed to answer the door, the children grew impatient and ran ahead to the next home, while O'Brien stayed behind. He eventually caught up with the group and produced 5 21-inch pixie sticks, which he would later claim he was given from the occupant of the house that had not answered the door. At the end of the evening, O'Brien gave each of his neighbors two children a pixie stick and one each to Timothy and Elizabeth. Upon returning home, O'Brien gave a fifth pixie stick to a 10-year-old boy whom he recognized from his church. Before bed, Timothy asked to eat some of his candy he collected, choosing the pixie stick. Timothy had trouble getting the powdered candy out of the straw, so O'Brien helped him loosen the powder. After tasting the candy, Timothy complained that it tasted bitter. O'Brien then gave his son Kool-Aid to wash away the taste. Timothy immediately began to complain that his stomach hurt and ran to the bathroom, where he began vomiting and convulsing. O'Brien later claimed he had held Timothy while he was vomiting, and the child went limp in his arms. Timothy O'Brien died en route to the hospital less than an hour after consuming the candy. Timothy's death from poisoned Halloween candy prompted fear in the community. Numerous parents in Deer Park and the surrounding area returned candy their children acquired from trick-or-treating to police, fearing it was laced with poison. Police did not initially suspect O'Brien of any wrongdoing until Timothy's autopsy revealed that the pixie stick he consumed was laced with a fatal dose of potassium cyanide. Four of the five pixie sticks O'Brien claimed to receive were recovered by authorities from the other children, none of whom had consumed the candy. The parents of the fifth child became hysterical when they could not locate the candy upon police calling their house to inform them. The parents rushed upstairs to find their son asleep, holding the unconsumed poisoned candy. The boy had been unable to open the staples that sealed the wrapper shut. All five of the pixie sticks had been opened with the top 2 inches, 51 millimeters, refilled with cyanide powder, and were resealed with a staple. According to a pathologist who tested the pixie stick, the candy consumed by Timothy contained enough cyanide to kill two adults, while the other four candies contained dosages that could kill three or four adults. O'Brien initially told police that he could not remember which house he got the pixie stick from. Police became suspicious of his excuses because O'Brien and his neighbor had only taken their children to homes on two streets because it had been raining. Their suspicions increased after learning that none of the homes the group had visited had handed out pixie sticks. After walking the neighborhood with police three times, O'Brien led them to the home that the group visited, but whose occupant did not answer the door. O'Brien claimed that he revisited the home before catching up with the group. He said the owner of the home did not turn the light on, but cracked the door open and handed him five pixie sticks. He claimed to have only seen the man's arm, which he described as hairy. The home was owned by a man named Courtney Melvin. Melvin was an air traffic controller at William P. Hobby Airport and did not get home from work until 11 p.m. on Halloween night. Police ruled Melvin out as a suspect when nearly 200 people confirmed that Melvin was at work. So, he staples them.
A lot of these stories, and this one might bother me more than any of them.
Yeah.
Just that you could do something to a child like that, your own child.
Well, and he was attempting, essentially, he had no regard for killing possibly his friend's kids, too.
Like, you know your child is eating the candy that will kill him, and you go get Kool-Aid so he can get down easier. Like, that's the most twisted thing ever.
Mike, then I go back to looking, it took about 10 years to get him executed. Why the fuck didn't they just, you know, I don't, I'm just like, I'm not an extremist or anything, but when you convict the person and you know that they did it and they admitted they did it, why don't we just fucking shoot him right then and there? I mean, why are we...
$100,000 in debt, eat your own damn cyanide.
Yeah, give him the pixie sticks. It's like, here's your reward. If you can eat all these pixie sticks and survive, you can go free. But you have to eat all five of them right here in front of us, right now. And there you go. Problem solved. We're not spending tax dollars on this guy in prison for the next 10 years.
Oh my God. Could you imagine that other family? They go up and the kid is literally holding it and couldn't get it.
Jesus. Open. I know. Your heart would be, you know, just going nuts. I have no words. I am without words on this one, because it is just so shockingly insane that someone like this exists. And the thing is, it's shit like that that, you know, I guess is the reason we have programs like and networks like Investigation Discovery and Dateline and all the, those things that they came on in the, you know, the early 80s, like 2020 and such. You know, it was because stories like this of this is insanity of these insane narcissistic maniacs that do shit like this with no regard. I mean, they're what the fuck?
And really think the whole thing through, like he planned all this and really thought he could get away with it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll blame it on that guy. I don't know who the guy is. I don't even know if he's got a hairy arm, but I'm blaming it on that guy.
Yeah.
And there's no way that guy did it. Like, okay, now all of a sudden it's you. Like,
yeah.
How could you be so cruel and so stupid?
What's funny about some things like this with people like this is they can be, there's a certain level of genius to them, and then there's a certain level of just utter stupidity as well, where they miss like little marks that otherwise a sane person would clearly see because it would stand out, like a stapled pixie stick. If you were a parent and you saw a stapled pixie stick, yeah, I think you might say this looks slightly tampered with, because as far as I know, Wonka hasn't been putting the fucking stapler to their pixie sticks since at least the 40s, you know. but it's
but a kid wouldn't know.
No, you're right. A kid would not know that.
Kids trying to open it.
And we weren't necessarily in the time period either of everyone checking candy either. We were just beginning into that world of everyone freak out. But it's things like this. It's examples like this where, thank God, as far as we know, they're not, you know, they weren't super widespread. There wasn't a gazillion people. There wasn't a Ronald O'Brien in every town doing this. Unfortunately, there was a Ronald O'Brien in a small town, in a suburb of Houston in Texas that was doing this. But just one person, it takes one person in one place in the world, really, to be this fucking insane. And then everybody freaks out. And then everybody's suspicious of everyone. Because if Ronald O'Brien, who's like a deacon at the church, he walks the neighbor's dogs, he's got enough friends where they can all go trick-or-treating as buddies together. And, you know, and he also loves kittens. It omitted that part, but he was a big lover of kittens. And get this, he also apparently made the best hot chocolate in town. You can have that guy. He can also be the one who wants to will kill your kids and his own for $100,000 in insurance money. And then suddenly every fucking person is a suspect, or you're a suspect of every person, because it is so real, because it could happen to you, because it's a situation. It's not like, oh, this happened in a big business or this happened in some foreign country. This happened down the road in a small town in Texas with a nutcase and pixie sticks and a stapler and cyanide. And then Halloween is fucked forever. and to this day, we check our candy just to make sure we're not running into a Ronald O'Brien incident.
For a long time, it was about like razor blades and stuff being in candy.
Yeah.
So that must have started somewhere.
Yeah. The razor blades came up a little bit after that. But yes, this was all part of the beginning of that nut era of fucking with Halloween candy.
You know, sometimes I think that, you know, you hear stories about women doing things to their children.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think it's for, you know, like that, is it Munchausen's?
Yeah,
right?
There is.
They their child or
yeah.
Make their child sick.
Yeah.
And kind of then they get sympathy and attention for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's some kind of twisted thing like that with some people. This guy, I think, was just, I need a way out of my financial issues so
yeah.
I could kill my kid.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of feels like that's what that poor child meant to him.
Yeah, I mean, it was very kind of cut and dry. This was, I mean, psychopathic to do something like that. But it, like I said, the word I used, narcissism, because it just, they hide in plain sight. And they quite oftentimes will be, you know, someone prominent in a church, someone prominent in an organization, in a social organization or something. I'm not ripping on churches or anything, but it's that sort of stuff where it is shit that's in plain sight. And sometimes people going out of their way to look like the normal. I am here to help. I'm here to be a good person. And certainly a majority of people are simply there to be a good person because that's what they want to do. They want to be a part of their community. But the scary thing is, sometimes individuals like this, they're not the creepy one necessarily hiding off in the corner that no one talks to in that scary house down the road. They're the person you that just served you that that big scoop of mashed potatoes at the potluck. So that's
BTK. We talked about that in that episode.
Yeah. And that's what makes these stories so much more real and so much scarier, because it's not the weird person in the weird part of town with the weird looking house and dresses, you know, strange. It's the normal. It's the normal that is scary. Let's continue on with this story and the investigation of Ronald O'Brien. As their investigation furthered, police learned that Ronald O'Brien was over $100,000 in debt and had a history of being unable to hold a job. $100,000 in debt in 2020 terms is about $520,000. In 10 years preceding the crime, O'Brien held 21 jobs. At the time of his arrest, he was suspected of theft at his job at Texas State Optical and was close to being fired. His car was about to be repossessed. He had defaulted on several bank loans and had the family home foreclosed on. Police discovered that O'Brien had taken out life insurance policies on his children in the months preceding Timothy's death. In January of 1974, he had taken out $10,000 life insurance policies on both of his children. 1 month before Timothy's death, O'Brien took out an additional $20,000 policies on both children. Despite the objections of his life insurance agency, in the days preceding Timothy's death, O'Brien had taken out yet another $20,000 policy on each child. The various policies totaled approximately $60,000. O'Brien's wife maintained that she did not know about the insurance policies or her children's lives. Police also learned that on the morning after Timothy's death, O'Brien had called his insurance company to inquire about collecting the policies he had taken out on his son. After learning that O'Brien had visited a chemical supply store in Houston to buy cyanide shortly before Halloween 1974, he left without purchasing anything after learning the smallest amount available to purchase was 5 pounds. Police began to suspect that Ronald O'Brien killed his son. Police theorized that O'Brien had laced the candies with poison in an effort to kill his children to collect on their life insurance policies. They believe he gave the other children the candy in an effort to cover up his crime. The other children never consumed the candy. Police repeatedly questioned O'Brien, but he maintained his innocence. Although police never discovered when or where O'Brien bought the poison, he was arrested for Timothy's murder on November 5, 1974. He was indicted on 1 count of capital murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. O'Brien entered a plea of not guilty to all 5 counts. O'Brien's trial began in Houston on May 5, 1975. During the trial, a chemist who was acquainted with O'Brien testified in the summer 1973. O'Brien contacted him about cyanide and how much would be fatal. A chemical supply salesman also testified that O'Brien had asked him how to purchase cyanide. Friends and coworkers testified that in the months before Timothy's death, O'Brien showed an unusual interest in cyanide and spoke about how much it would take to kill a person. O'Brien's sister-in-law and brother-in-law testified that on the day of Timothy's funeral, he spoke of using the money from Timothy's insurance policy to take a long vacation and buy other items. O'Brien continued to maintain his innocence. His defense mainly drew upon the decades-old urban legend concerning a mad poisoner who hands out Halloween candy laced with poison or needles or candy apples with razor blades inserted. These stories have persisted despite the fact that there are no documented incidents of strangers poisoning Halloween candy. The case and subsequent trial garnered national attention, and the press dubbed O'Brien the Candyman. On June 3, 1975, a jury took 46 minutes to find O'Brien guilty of capital murder on 4 counts of attempted murder. The jury took 71 minutes to sentence him to death. Shortly after he was convicted, his wife filed for divorce. She later remarried, and her new husband adopted her daughter, Elizabeth. Ronald O'Brien was confined to the Huntsville unit in Huntsville, Texas, according to Reverend Carol Pickett, a former chaplain who worked for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. O'Brien was shunned and despised by his fellow death row inmates for killing a child and was absolutely friendless. The inmates reportedly petitioned to hold an organized demonstration on O'Brien's execution day to express their hatred of him. O'Brien's first execution date was set for August 8, 1980. His attorney successfully petitioned for a stay of execution. A second date was scheduled for May 25, 1982. That date was also postponed. Judge Michael McSpadden scheduled a third execution date for October 31, 1982, the eighth anniversary of the crime, and he offered to personally drive O'Brien to the death chamber. It was to have been the first time Texas executed an inmate by lethal injection. The Supreme Court delayed the date yet again to give O'Brien a chance to pursue an appeal to seek a new trial. A fourth date was scheduled for March 31, 1984. O'Brien's lawyer sought a fourth stay on the basis that lethal injection was a cruel and unusual punishment. On March 28, a federal judge rejected the request. On March 31, 1984, shortly after midnight, O'Brien was executed by lethal injection at the Huntsville unit. In his final statement, O'Brien maintained his innocence, stating that he felt the death penalty was wrong. He added, "I forgive all, and I do mean all, those who have been involved in my death. God bless you all, and may God bless best blessings be always yours." During the execution, a crowd of 300 demonstrators gathered outside the prison cheered, while some yelled "trick or treat," others showered anti-death penalty demonstrators with candy. O'Brien is buried in Forest Park East Cemetery in Webster, Texas. Timothy is buried in Forest Park Lawndale Cemetery in Houston. I'm not all about desecrating graves or anything like that, but should anyone have the idea? Maybe it already has been done a few times. That's my guess.
What a horrible person. And I'm, you know, I just worry about his daughter. I hope they got her some help.
Yeah.
Is it for her to go on knowing that her dad wanted to kill her too?
Yeah.
He gave her poison too. She just didn't eat it.
It's like,
that would mess you up. Losing a sibling when you're young at any age would be so hard. And then, like, all of that.
I'm amazed he didn't get killed in prison, quite honestly. He survived nearly 10 years behind bars with prisoners avidly hating him. How the fuck did he not die? I mean,
they kept him, like, you know, one of those situations where he's in his cell 23 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then they supervise him 1 hour a day out on his own.
Maybe. No. Why? And why?
Jeffrey Epstein alive, but yeah. That guy.
Yeah, we can't keep Epstein alive for more than like 2 weeks, but this guy can survive 10 years in fucking jail. I don't get it. I do not get it, you know? it's insane. And there you go. I mean, there's a perfect example, too, where we were talking about how some people like this and these insane mindsets, they miss the obvious. Like talking to your family about cyanide leading up to the year you kill your child with cyanide. Like, gee, you think that might be a little bit suspicious? Normal people don't walk around talking about cyanide unless they're a chemist. But even then.
Of course the guy remembers you coming in and like, oh, 5 pounds or whatever, 5-gallon bucket, whatever it was that he had to buy. Oh, I don't want that much.
The guy's like, whoa, I don't want to kill the whole neighborhood, just 5 kids. It's like, what the fuck does that mean?
Pixie stick amount. You know, I mean, like, of course that guy remembers him.
It's
like, what?
Yeah.
And taking out three life insurance policies on each kid?
Yeah, and he kept upping him, like, right until the day that he died almost.
And then it's like, hey, my son died. What about that life insurance?
What do you think? Do you think I can cash in on that yet? Is that good? It's like your first call is to the insurance company after... it's like, seriously? That's how you're going to work this? That seems a little bit suspicious to me.
God, that's so strange.
I think I'd have to wait for like the insurance company to come knocking on my door, quite honestly, and going, you are owed this money because of your policy. And then I would just be like sitting there drooling going, Who are you? Who? Because I would still be in shock and pain, and money would not be the last thing on my mind. And they'd be like, is the power still on in your house, sir? I don't fucking know. You know, because I wouldn't have paid the power bill because I would have forgotten about that, too. I would not be in any case, in any sane way, to pick up the phone the next morning to call the insurance fucking company and inquire about the insurance money if my child had just died of cyanide poisoning. I don't get it.
It's so sick.
So, there you go, kids. Trick or treat. That's the Halloween Candyman. It is interesting, though, where we're talking about the poisonings and stuff of children Halloween candy. There really hasn't been any, and it was worded very specifically, any cases, as far as I'm aware, and as far as this article references from Wikipedia, of others being poisoned by an outside source, essentially, on Halloween. There are other cases of people like this, not quite to this extreme of poisoning their children, but there are cases where people have faked it for attention and things of that nature. But there hasn't been really, like I said, and as far as I'm aware, and if I'm wrong, correct me, any documented cases of truly someone, you know, lacing up something and giving it out as trick-or-treat candy.
But there's always been those rumors.
There always has been, and there probably always will be. And you have to wonder, I mean, there's some things out there, there's some substances out there and shit that, you know, really are fairly untraceable. And, you know, if one thing went out and one kid died, you know, some kids hang on to Halloween candy for, I mean, I held on to mine for like almost a year. I quite often would still have last year's Halloween candy by the time next year rolled around, at least a little bit of it left. You know, the kid could have it after Easter, and, you know, they're probably not going to be thinking Halloween, you know, so.
But that's one of those strange days, because you tell your children, like, don't take candy from strangers. Don't take anything from strangers. But on Halloween, we will dress you up in adorable little outfits and you'll get all kinds of candy from strangers.
And let me usher you around the neighborhood to do that. No, you. I'm not going to go up to the steps with you. You go up by yourself. You're a big girl.
You just say trick or treat, and that total stranger is going to give you candy, and it's okay to eat that candy.
It is kind of a mixed message, isn't it? But it's still my favorite holiday, and some of my fondest memories of growing up are Halloween. But obviously, you know, you have horrible shit like this that happens. And as a parent,
I'd never eat a damn pixie stick again.
It scares the shit out of you.
I haven't in like a million years, but
I used to love pixie sticks. That's another candy that, as we wrap this show up, you know, pointless conversation, but little facts, little known facts to today's children. Pixie sticks used to come in more than three flavors. I believe now when you go to the store, if you get like a bag of pixie sticks, it's like orange, blue, and purple, I think. When I was a kid, and I'm sure when you were a kid too, I would think, it was like the rainbow of colors. It was green, yellow, everything. But now,
I don't really remember, but it does seem like that.
Now there's just like three colors, at least the last time I saw pixie sticks, and it's disappointing.
It was weird candy. It's just dumping sugar in your mouth.
Yeah, I love doing it. It was great fun. I also loved the yellow sweet tart, and those went away for a while, and they brought the yellow sweet tart back. I'm very proud of them for that. If Jolly Rancher could bring back the lemon Jolly Rancher, I would be happy as well. And what's the other? Oh, and Skittles fucking with the green Skittle. That's bullshit right there. It should not be green apple. It needs to be lime. If you don't want people to do crazy shit around holidays, quit fucking with their candy. That's the message of today's show. No, I'm kidding.
And here's my thing. Just give away Reese's. I'd be happy.
Yeah.
The rest of it is Reese's.
We gave our cow we tried to bribe our cow with a Hershey bar today, but apparently she doesn't like chocolate. So, because I guess you can give cow
to your your cow. Your cow's like, that ain't food.
Yeah, apparently we're trying to get chocolate milk, but that's not how you do it, I guess. But no, actually, cows do like it. It was more so a bribe to get into her stall so we could milk her. But because we were reading online that cows like chocolate and you can give cows candy, you know, in extreme moderation. Although some people on factory farms will literally feed them Skittles to make them very fat and sell them for more. But we're not feeding the cow Skittles. It was literally out of Harper's Halloween candy bag. There's still candy in there. The cow really didn't give a shit. So Harper was like, well, fine, I'll eat it then, bitch. She did not say that. I added that in, but you could just picture cute, funny little Harper being like, okay, fine, I'll eat that candy bar then, bitch. You know, and then walks away, throws the wrapper on the ground, like dropping the mic.
It was thinking that.
She probably was. I'm sure she was. But there you go. Halloween Candyman. Today's Dark Side of Wikipedia. Glad that we could take everyone away from the realities of 2020 for a fun story like that.
God. That one was so creepy.
That's one of the worst, I think. And it didn't involve like mass, amounts of people. It touched on how real it could be in our worlds. If you like the show, please press subscribe, whatever platform it is you listen to us on. Leave us a review over there on Apple Podcasts. We do greatly appreciate that.